Welcome to Transforming Education, Leadership Lessons. This podcast is hosted by Northwestern College. We're bringing you thought leaders who are influencing education and the world around them. Each episode provides new leadership lessons, so you can learn how to embrace your own influence.
Leadership has nothing to do with title or position. That leadership has to do with impact. And the role of a leader isn't to create followers, it's to enable more leaders.
Take away leadership qualities that inspire.
I think good leaders really get people brought together around a cause and can inspire them to be better than they were yesterday or to do something great.
Care about others.
We need teachers out there that are caring and compassionate and are interested in the student beyond the discipline that they're teaching.
Show people they matter.
We don't have a bullying problem. We don't even have a gun problem. We have a mattering problem.
By knowing you matter.
You matter to yourself first before you can matter to someone else.
So further your impact.
When you just authentically love your students, I just don't think you can help but grow.
Understand your core values.
You can tell pretty quickly any core leader whether or not he or she is there for the mission at hand, for the people that they serve, or whether they're there for themselves.
And align your mission.
Everything we do on campus, whether it's someone in the maintenance department or someone teaching in the classroom or to coach, it should tie back to our mission of impacting students for the cause of Christ.
Discover how to use your influence to inspire others.
That is why the relationships is so critical in everything we do, because when people know you care about them, they know yet they have your best interest, and then it sinks in.
Let's welcome our host, Gary Richardson.
Thank you, Leslie, and thanks to all of you for listening to Transforming Education Leadership Lessons. Your time is valuable, and because of that, we bring in thought partners to inspire and influence your leadership. Today, we will be discussing leadership lessons with Jen David Lang. Jen has worked in the field of education for over 25 years. She has had a wide range of experiences in both teaching and administration, has taught both math and English, created and provided professional development for educators, and has helped to start a number of New York City schools. Jen founded The Main Idea in the spring of 2007 because she witnessed so many school leaders who were busy with the day-to-day responsibilities of running their schools and really had no time for their own professional development. Through The Main Idea, education leaders have ready access to the most current and powerful ideas in education to help them serve as strong instructional leaders. I myself am a subscriber to The Main Idea and love the access to tons of information on leadership. You can reach Jen through her website for The Main Idea at www.themainidea.net. Welcome to the podcast, Jen.
Thank you so much for having me, Gary. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So who is Jen David Lang?
I, probably like a lot of your listeners, I'm just a deep believer in the power of education to be the great equalizer. I'm really passionate about its potential to change the trajectory of young people's lives. It doesn't mean that it's equal to everyone at this point, but it has that power to change lives. And when I was in college, I thought I was going to be a lawyer. And then I got a summer job teaching and I just fell in love with it. And I felt like instead of spending my life fighting bad eggs in the field of law, why don't I plant some good positive seeds? And so that's why I entered the field of education. And I was just 22 years old and I started a nonprofit called Summerbridge. Now it's called Breakthrough, where I hired high school and college students to teach middle school students during the summer and tutor them throughout the year for 2 years.
Okay.
And it was an amazing job. First of all, I introduced the field of education to high school and college students who otherwise might not have gotten into the field. And it also opened up a whole world to these middle school students who didn't have the strongest schools to attend. So that was a long time ago when I was 22. And now I spend most of my days supporting school leaders. So like you said, I write one book summary a month as part of a subscription service called The Main Idea, because I know how busy all of your listeners are. Uh-huh. It is very hard to sit down at the end of the day and read a 350-page book. So I write a thorough 8-page summary and give PD ideas at the end for how you can take the ideas from the book and bring them back to your school or your district. And the other way I support school leaders is through these online groups that I run called masterminds.
Mm-hmm.
I have groups of about 10 school district leaders from all over the country, and we meet for 1 hour every other week for professional learning, for coaching, for problem solving support. And really, it's been like the most amazing professional learning I've ever seen, particularly during this pandemic. So that's a little bit more about me and what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, thank you. I also was in pre-law for one class, and when I looked at all the reading, I thought, I don't think that's for me. And so the main idea is perfect for me. I don't have to read 360 pages. I can get it summarized. But you had mentioned starting the Summer Bridge and getting involved that way. And then also you had the fortune, I guess, of being able to start new schools in New York City. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was part of a team before we had charter schools in New York.
Okay.
One summer, we sat around the table, and I was a founding teacher at that time, a part of this team, and we got to sit around the table and think, what would the mission be? You know, what would the schedule be, the curriculum? This is before a lot of the testing days and all of that, and it was an incredible experience. And then when the charter law passed in New York, I started working for a nonprofit, and I helped a lot of groups as they started charter schools in New York City. And then ironically, the school that I was the teacher for, sitting around the table, that school we started, the Life Sciences Secondary School, it was called. The principal of that school now, over 20 years later, she's a principal in one of my mastermind groups. Just complete coincidence.
Okay.
So I've gotten to hear the update. The school is still there.
So what'd you learn from setting up those charter schools that has stayed with you since?
I think it's that combination of high aspirations and hope, but grounded in reality. Like, we had this idea that kids were gonna have 20-minute breaks between longer 90-minute blocks, and we started with sixth and ninth grade, and there was chaos. So, you know, I think there's a balance between the ideals that you wanna reach, but really thinking through some of the planning and the specifics. Mm. I'm a very like practical kind of person when it comes to schools. So I think that's what I took away.
Yeah, good. Well, in the past year, the COVID year, as I guess we'll use that as a term, you devoted some time providing the one-page guides that you had mentioned to school leaders called Riding the Seas of Change, and the seas stand for calm and comfort, clarity and communication, connection and coping with stress. Would you mind giving us a little bit of an overview on the seas, and then, you know, what things from that work that you did will remain appropriate for not only a building principal, but for an aspiring leader or an instructional coach or a teacher leader that they can carry forward, I guess, in normal times when there is uncertainty?
Sure.
That was a long-winded question. I apologize.
No, that was great, Gary. So when COVID hit, we say, oh my gosh, no one was prepared. But actually, some leaders were more prepared than others. They knew how to handle change. And while it's true, we've never experienced the type of change in our lifetimes that we just saw with the pandemic, the truth is that school district leaders, teacher leaders, aspiring leaders, in our field, we deal with change all the time, And so there are some strategies to deal with change. And ironically, a lot of them start with the letter C. So that's a sort of a play on the word to ride the seas of change. Uh-huh. So during the pandemic, I created a series of one-pagers, just five of them, to help leaders manage all of this change. And even in a post-pandemic world, these skills are very relevant because we're living through times of great change, right? In the 21st century,
yes.
We're seeing disruptions in communication, transportation. I mean, everything is new. So I think all of them are appropriate for now. But I'll give you a little idea of what I wrote about. The first one-pager I wrote about, the first C's, were calm and comfort. So pandemic hit, right? You have a huge change and you need the leader there to provide some immediate calm and comfort.
Yeah.
And so I grounded this in a quote by the global leader, Thich Nhat Hanh. He writes about the Vietnamese boat people navigating rough seas, literal S-E-A-S. And the boats could sink if people panicked. So they needed people to be calm. And this is a quote from him. He said, "If even one person aboard can remain calm, lucid, knowing what to do and what not to do, he or she can help the boat survive. His or her expression, face, voice communicates clarity and calmness, and people have trust in that person. One such person can save the lives of many." have goosebumps just reading that.
Yeah.
And that was the first role of our leaders when the pandemic hit. They were told, you know, put on their own masks. They had to take care of their own basic needs because they had to be resilient. They had to be that calm face. So there are a lot of suggestions about journal writing or having support people to talk to, and really first taking care of themselves. And then they had to provide comfort for their community, project normalcy, listen to people, speak to people face to face, even if that meant over Zoom, allow people some grace, some slack. So that was the first set of C's. After that, a very clear priority was clarity in communication. So it was very important, the leaders' communication during this chaotic time. But I define communication a little bit differently. Most leaders, when they think communication, they think, oh, what do I want to convey? What do I want to convey? But I focused on the how. And I was reminded of Maya Angelou's quote, and she said, I've learned people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel.
Very true.
Think back to the pandemic and how the leaders in your school or district made you feel. So I tried to turn the tables and say, let's think about in our communications, how do we want people to feel? Do we want them to feel calm, comforted, reassured? So I posed a series of questions and ideas for leaders to think about how they want to make people feel and to really focus on two-way communication, not just what you're saying, but also venues to allow for listening and two-way communication. So not just a webinar for everyone to listen to all the updates, but maybe time for question and answer. A lot of people had virtual office hours. That's a great thing to keep after the pandemic, where you're always accessible for certain amounts of time during the day. Having check-ins at the beginning of a meeting. Don't just start with business, right? How are you feeling? What's going on? So that was the second one. And then the third one was about building connection. I won't go through all five of them, but you know, it was so important to build connection. And I really do believe that the connection that leaders built during the pandemic rolls over into when we, you know, go back to a more quote unquote normal or face-to-face year. I have 20 ways that leaders could build connection. And a lot of these are specific to remote connection, but it also works for in-person. So having some shared symbols, like a mascot for your school,
right,
images, those kinds of things, bringing people together. I know a lot of people had virtual happy hours where you could have a tea or a beer, depending on your community. So just different ways to build connections. And schools are about relationships, so we know the importance of connection year round. And then I have a couple of other ones. The next one was about dealing with stress. But yeah, so I have
talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Sure. And they're on my website if people want to see them. That one was about coping with stress.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, based on some ideas from the Mayo Clinic, I came up with four A's for broad ways to deal with stress. The first way is to just avert it altogether, be proactive about it. The second way is to alter your reaction to the stress. There's going to be stress, but you don't have to react the same way. The third area is to begin to accept things as they are, right? The pandemic was COVID-19 wasn't going away. There are certain things we had to accept. And then you also have to adapt to your surroundings. So those are the four larger areas, but underneath those, I shared 18 tips for ways that you as a school leader can cope with stress. So those are on my website. If anybody wants to go there, you can look at these one pagers and you can discuss them with your leadership team, with other staff, with teachers. Because I can guarantee you that this is going to be a challenging year too, and you're going to need these C's for the upcoming year as well.
Yeah, those are really good. I appreciate that. We are visiting with Jen David Lang. The main idea in this episode of Transforming Education, Leadership Lessons. So Jen, as I worked in a leadership coaching role for a few years as a consultant with School Administrators of Iowa, and specifically, you know what that entails, going into schools, working with leadership teams, and that can include the principal, which was my main focus as part of the administrative support program through the teacher leadership compensation plan that we have in throughout all of Iowa. And there were some buildings that you would go in and you would just know, this is really cool. They're doing good stuff. The communication is good. And then there are others for a variety of reasons. There were different types of personalities that evolved and at times would shut down the process. And so you wrote about leaders facing resistance, and you summarize those in one of your summaries on the 8 types of difficult people that would include underminers, contrarians, recruiters, the challenged, on-the-job retirees, resident experts, the unelected representatives, the whiners and complainers. And those are different roles that occurred. And as I read those and knew we were going to talk about this on the podcast, I realized that this isn't about attacking those roles. It's more about what do we do about that, knowing that it can occur. And in a long way around, in my work as a principal and superintendent, we had to work with unions on a yearly basis. And my approach was more collaborative. And here's why I say that. Something caused unions to form, right? Leaders or managers or administrators didn't treat people appropriately. And conversely, there were employees that would take advantage of the system and take advantage of the rules. And so you have this complex union labor management that takes place. And so I'm connecting to, I believe that just like leaders are responsible for coalitions to be formed, they have some stake in why these roles had evolved and developed over time. And so you talk about that a little bit, that principals helped to create this dilemma of these roles. What I found interesting is you do have some strategies for not only principals, but any teacher leader that is able to handle the resistance or actually how to avoid it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, let me give some context. This is from a book called Working with Difficult and Resistant Staff by, I think it's a husband and wife pair, John and Sheila Eller. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of wonderful books, but this particular book, Working with Difficult and Resistant Staff, it's a fantastic book. And I have a summary. If your listeners want to email me, I'm happy to give you a free sample summary of this book.
Nice.
Basically, they provide leaders with a toolbox of strategies for handling difficult staff members. And it's not a matter of if, it's really a matter of when you have them.
Sure.
Because again, we work in a people field, right?
Yes.
There's always going to be some difficulty. And they provide strategies for confronting those behaviors when they arise, dealing with those behaviors proactively before they even arise, and then also considering what you as the leader, teacher leader, principal, assistant principal, what might you be doing mm-hmm. to contribute to those behaviors, which we often don't take that kind of responsibility. I know I don't always, so
yeah.
I appreciated that. And, you know, these behaviors tend to arise during times when there's change and when there's conflict, right? You're not going to, if you buy all your staff members free ice cream cones, you're not going to see a lot of difficult behaviors, right? We're talking about times of deep change and conflict. So we've just been through a very difficult year with a lot of change. So I think that leaders are likely to see some more of these behaviors when we return to school in the fall. So what these authors did is they outlined 8 different types of difficult behaviors so that you can begin to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
So like the ones you said, like people who undermine your authority, those who are contrarians, who you say A, they say B, right? The those who are challenged, who don't really have the skills to do what you're asking for in a new initiative. So they're going to challenge you on that. On the job retirees, we just had a lot of retirements, but I'm sure there are other people who are just burned out, right? So there's a lot of these different types of people. So I'm going to share a few of the proactive steps that they suggest that you take to deal with what you know will be, you know, there's going to be difficult behaviors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the first one is just having structures in place in your meetings for people to air concerns rather than just, here's my initiative, I'm presenting it, and then move on. You know, give people opportunities to talk in small groups or large groups, or if you're worried about too much negativity, let them write a response. How are you feeling about this? So give people time to respond, but build those structures in proactively so they don't have to hide in the parking lot and talk or the staff room and speak poorly about, you know.
The parking lot conversations are a killer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Model being open. So when somebody does give you some feedback or critique that you don't love, you know, don't shut down or be angry, because then that's going to push everything underground. So model being gracious and accept. It doesn't mean you have to believe in all the feedback, but you do have to hear it. Speaking of hearing, it's very important for the leader to model listening and build trust. You can't start with a whole bunch of changes and initiatives until you've shown that you can listen and build trust. If you're a new leader and you're rushing in or a new role to start a bunch of new initiatives, yeah, you're going to see the underminers and the contrarians. Instead, spend some time listening, talking to people one-on-one, building that trust. Sometimes you think when you start a new initiative, you've given everyone all the information, but you really haven't. So make sure there's time where people can ask questions. Make sure you spend time planning. In the same way teachers plan their lessons, you should plan your staff meetings and really think through, have you given enough information? If not, then yeah, people get angry and they get upset and they react. Another incredible proactive stance you can take right now is to hire for interpersonal skills. When you hire someone, so what I always say is instead of having a teacher do a 30-minute lesson, have a teacher do a 15-minute demo and then give them some critical feedback and see how they respond. You know, ask hires, an assistant principal, anyone, ask them. So tell me about a time there was an interpersonal, there was a conflict in your previous school, and what did you do about it? Right? Do they have some skills? So there are a lot of proactive measures that you can take to prevent a lot of these behaviors. And ways that you may be contributing to the problem is by not doing all these things that I said, right? Yeah. If you don't build trust, you can't really expect to put a new initiative out there and expect everyone to say, rah, rah, right? You know, if you haven't listened to people, then you can't expect them to share their concerns with you rather than in the parking lot or the staff room.
Absolutely.
So all the things that I said are things that you might have violated inadvertently if you're seeing some of these difficult behaviors come to the surface. The other thing we do sometimes as leaders is inadvertently we give too much attention to those difficult staff members, right? We don't shut them down. We let them talk during staff members. We give them too much airtime. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is we don't address problems early enough. So there are some negative behaviors and we don't want to ruffle feathers, so we just let it be. But that's a problem on two fronts. One, with the staff member who's difficult, but also with all the other staff members. They need to see that their behavior is not okay. And in a public way, not embarrassing them, you really need to address a lot of these issues early on. And if you haven't, then you are contributing a bit to those behaviors.
Right.
So that's just a little bit of an idea. And if you want a summary of that book, Working with Difficult and Resistant Staff, just send me an email. My email's on my website.
Okay. And that is themainidea.net. Very good. So again, we are visiting with Jen David Lang of The Main Idea in this episode of Transforming Education Leadership Lessons. So Jen, what's one thing that you're working on right now that we wouldn't know about that you're pretty passionate about?
So for my small groups, my mastermind groups, I provide a one-pager for each of these meetings, and I do research online and reading. And this is a great strategy for anyone who's running a staff meeting. If you want your teachers or your leaders to do a reading, if you can provide them with something really short, and then you do a live read right there. Because when you ask people to read a chapter or read something before a meeting, they don't always get to it. Look, it's a very busy profession. So I have people do a live reading right there in the meeting. I carve out 5 minutes. That's it, 5 minutes to read a page, and then we discuss it. So the one that I'm working on next is on burnout. And it's actually Beyond Gratitude Journals, how to systematically address burnout, because I am anticipating that teachers and leaders are burnt out from this difficult year now, during the summer, during the early part of the year, and we need people's energy. And so there's been a lot of talk about mindfulness and gratitude journals, and those are great strategies individually, but you can't make anyone do a gratitude journal. You can't make anyone have a mindfulness practice, but there are some structural things as the leader that you can bake into your initiatives to proactively address burnout. So that's what I'm working on right now, is putting that one pager together for my group.
Nice. So in this world of education right now, what are you curious about?
Well, I think we are, even past pandemic, we are living in what's called a VUCA world. I don't know if you've heard that terminology, but VUCA stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And that's here to stay. So I'm very interested in leadership that addresses, helps leaders manage these difficult times. So that's adaptive leadership, or I need to do some more reading about nimble leadership. And that's really where you develop a culture that empowers everyone to lead creatively, you know, and less bureaucratically, and more letting everybody rise to the occasion and address the kinds of new problems that we're going to have tomorrow and the next day that we've never addressed before.
So you have tons of books on your shelf that you summarize. So what are you reading right now or listening to that may not be educational, or it might, that you would highly recommend people to get a hold of?
I loved the work of Douglas Fisher and Nancy Fry. They wrote the Distance Learning Playbook, which helped a lot of people through the pandemic. And now they have a couple of books, Rebound, and I'm showing this, but of course your listeners can't hear that. They have a book called Leading the Rebound, specifically for leaders. It's 22 must-dos to restart teaching and learning. I'll be summarizing this in my July issue of The Main Idea. And then, yes, I do read books outside of education as well. I just got a copy of The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker, and it's really about the meetings that we hold, which I think people think of as a very mundane topic, but actually your meetings are a wonderful opportunity, not just for professional learning, but creating community, and we need community now more than ever. And a couple of podcasts also I love from the non-education world. I'm sure many of your listeners listen to Brené Brown, and I've been listening to Adam Grant. I think his is called Work Life. So yeah, it's helpful to both read deeply in education and get some ideas from outside as well.
And now you can listen to Transforming Education Leadership Lessons. So Jen, is there something that I just didn't know enough to ask you about?
I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Gary, and your team, Leslie and Mike. Thank you for your time. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you, and a real special thank you to your listeners, because this has been the most difficult year any of us have lived through. So, you know, thank you to the brave and tireless educators who got their students, their families, and themselves through this year. You did an amazing job.
Wow. Thank you very much. And thanks for taking time to be with us today. This was really awesome.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to Jen David Lang, founder of The Main Idea, for giving of her time and sharing her wisdom as we reflect on leaders that inspire and influence education and our world. So Leslie, what were the highlights that you took from Jen today?
Jen had so many great highlights for us, didn't she? She's just investing her professional career in educators and leaders and giving them those nuggets of inspiration and strategies for professional learning that they can take in manageable amounts, because we are so busy and educators are investing and changing lives, and
that's kind of what we've always wanted when we're doing these, are just getting some people some strategies or things to think about that make them better. Yeah, there was a fountain of stuff there.
So much so. And we encourage our listeners to go to her website as well, themainidea.net, for some of these takeaways. But she talked first about riding the seas of change, which coming off of COVID is especially important, because we know that there is always going to be change, and it may be publicly again like COVID, or just personally in our own lives. And those seas are calm and comfort. She talked about one person can make that difference of remaining calm and saving the boat right from the rocky waters. And secondly, clarity and communication, not only what we need to communicate, but more importantly, how we want people to feel. And Maya Angelou is, again, that great quote of people remember just how we make them feel, not everything we said or did. And then finally, connection. So those shared symbols and just bringing people together in ways that matter most. And that's going to continue, especially as we get hopefully back to normal. We need that connection. Mm-hmm. She also talked a lot about coping with stress. The four A's: avert, alter a reaction, accept, and adapt.
Yeah, those are really good. Just little hints about how we can take care of ourselves, which then translates into how other people can take care of themselves as well. And I was really interested in her strategies for what leaders and their behaviors may have caused as far as those resistors that we may have, not just in schools, but in any organization.
Exactly. And the toolbox of strategies that she provides in order to confront that. A few takeaways are to give structure in those proactive steps, giving opportunity for talking and getting feedback, that two-way street. Also to model and being open and building that trust. So again, thinking, did we really give everyone enough information? And how can you plan for successful meetings rather than just allowing them to happen, but really being intentional about what should take place? And also to hire for interpersonal skills. Oftentimes we think, let's hire awesome educators, you know, that know their stuff, but we also need to make sure they're good team players
and setting up their interviews in order to respond to feedback or conflict are ways to kind of understand their interpersonal skills. Sometimes we just allow too much air time for the difficult staff members. She suggested publicly outlining what's maybe appropriate and not, you know, in front of your difficult and non-difficult staff members, not to shame them, but to establish.
It's really important to model, not only model encouraging and celebrating for staff, but it's also important to model how you dignify some of the negative responses that you might get and model how you handle those, because it happens to all of us.
Whether
it's with somebody we work with or a parent or someone else that we're trying to lead, it does happen. So I thought her book choices were interesting.
Yes. She mentioned books by Douglas Fisher and Nancy Fry after their distance learning playbook. Now they have Leading the Rebound. So some strategies for coming back from this COVID time. And The Art of Gathering by Priyanka Parker. Listen to her podcast on Brené Brown, and she really talks about purpose beyond just going through the ritual, but, you know, really what's important about gathering in many different ways, and also books by or podcasts by Adam Grant and Brené Brown's.
Yeah, that's very good. Thank you, Leslie. Thanks so much to all of you as well for listening to Transforming Education Leadership Lessons. You have around a million options for podcasting, and we appreciate you spending time with us. As a leader in education, you matter, and how you lead matters to a whole bunch of people that you serve on a daily basis. You were created for significance. And remember to email Jen for a free one-page summary of the book and what we discussed today. And I'm sure that if you ask real nicely, she'd send you more than one. But I won't say that out loud. As always, a special thanks to Leslie for co-hosting this with me, as well as pushing the podcast out to various sites, and to Mike for his technical help and editing and making this podcast a reality. For Leslie, Mike, I'm Gary. Until next time, inspire and influence.